Yesterday I was hiking around in an old abandoned military facility by the beach with some friends. And yes, I realize how romantic that sounds, so I'll say it again. Yesterday I was hiking in an old abandoned military facility. In any event, I stumbled upon an enclosure that once contained a massive cannon that had once protected the entire harbor. Next to it was a much graffitied sign that stated that the cannon was no longer needed thanks to aquatic vehicles and the invention of the atomic bomb, which I suppose now protect the harbour. In any event, I wanted to share that with you because I thought it was particularly well stated, especially for National Parks Department informational sign writing. So I thought I would take a moment to salute National Parks Department sign writers everywhere. Your work does not go unnoticed. Good evening. It's Monday, the 11th of September, 2006, and it's Miet's Bedtime Story Podcast. Señor Peril by William E. Barrett. Larry and I were junior engineers in the gas plant, which means that we were clerks. Anything that could be classified as paperwork came to the flat double desk across which we faced each other. The main office downtown sent us a bewildering array of orders and rules that were to be put into effect. Junior engineers were beneath the notice of everyone except the Mexican laborers at the plant. To them we were the visible form of a distant, unknowable paymaster. We were Señor Peril. Those Mexicans were great workmen. The aristocrats among them were the stokers, big men who worked Herculean 8-hour shifts in the fierce heat of the retorts. They scooped coal with huge shovels and hurled it with uncanny aim at tiny doors. The coal streamed out from the shovels like black water from a high-pressure nozzle and never missed the narrow opening. The stokers worked stripped to the waist, and there was pride and dignity in them. Few men could do such work, and they were the few. The company paid its men only twice a month, on the 5th and on the 20th. To a Mexican, this was absurd. What man with money will make it last 15 days? If he hoarded money beyond the spending of 3 days, he was a miser. And when, Señor, did the blood of Spain flow in the veins of misers? Hence, it was the custom for our stokers to appear every third or fourth day to draw the money due to them. There was a certain elasticity in the company rules, and Larry and I sent the necessary forms to the main office and received an advance against a man's paycheck. Then, one day, downtown favoured us with a memorandum. There have been many abuses of the advance against wages privilege. Hereafter, no advance against wages will be made to any employee except in a case of genuine emergency. We had no sooner posted the notice when in came Stoker Juan Garcia. He asked for an advance. I pointed to the notice. He spelled it through gently, then said, "What does this mean, this genuine emergency?" I explained to him patiently that the company was kind and sympathetic, but that it was a great nuisance to have to pay wages every few days. If someone was ill, or if money was urgently needed, for some other good reason, then the company would make an exception to the rule. Juan Garcia turned his hat over and over slowly in his big hands. "I do not get my money?" "Next payday, Juan, on the 20th." He went out silently, and I felt a little ashamed of myself. I looked across the desk at Larry. He avoided my eyes. In the next hour, two other stokers came in, looked at the notice, had it explained, and walked solemnly out. Then no more came. What we did not know was that Juan Garcia, Pete Mendoza, and Francisco Gonzalez had spread the word, and that every Mexican in the plant was explaining the order to every other Mexican. To get money now, the wife must be sick. There must be medicine for the baby. The next morning, Juan Garcia's wife was practically dying. Pete Mendoza's mother would hardly last the day. There was a veritable epidemic among children, and, just for variety, there was one sick father. We always suspected that the old man was really sick. No Mexican would otherwise have thought of him. At any rate, nobody paid Larry and me to examine private lives. We made out our forms with an added line describing the genuine emergency. Our people got paid. That went on for a week. Then came a new order, curt and to the point. Hereafter, employees will be paid only on the 5th and the 20th of the month. No exceptions will be made except in the case of employees leaving the services of the company. The notice went up on the board, and we explained its significance gravely. "No, Juan Garcia, we cannot advance your wages. It is too bad about your wife and your cousins and your aunts. But there is a new rule." Juan Garcia went out and thought it over. He thought out loud with Mendoza and Gonzalez and Ayala, and then in the morning he was back. "I am quitting the company for a different job. You pay me now?" We argued that it was a good company, and that it loved its employees like children. But in the end we paid off, because Juan Garcia quit. And so did Gonzalez, Mendoza, Obregón, Ayala, and Ortiz, the best stokers, men who could not be replaced. Larry and I looked at each other. We knew what was coming in about 3 days. One of our duties was to sit on the hiring line early each morning, engaging transient workers for the handy gangs. Any man was accepted who could walk up and ask for a job without falling down. Never before had we been called upon to hire such skillful virtuosos as stokers for handy gang work, but we were called upon to hire them now. The day foreman was wringing his hands and asking the Almighty if he was personally supposed to shovel this condemned coal, while there in a stolid, patient line were skilled men, Garcia, Mendoza, and others, waiting to be hired. We hired them, of course. There was nothing else to do. Each day we had a line of resigning stokers, and another line of stokers seeking work. Our paperwork became very complicated. At the main office they were jumping up and down. The procession of forms showing Juan Garcia's resignation and being hired over and over and over again was too much for them. Sometimes downtown had Garcia on the payroll twice at the same time when someone down there was slow in entering a resignation. Our phone rang early and often. Tolerantly and patiently we explained. There's nothing we could do if a man wants to quit, and if there are stokers available when the plant needs stokers, we hire them. out of chaos, downtown issued another order. I read it and whistled. Larry looked at it and said, "It's going to be very quiet around here." The order read, "Hereafter, no employee who resigns may be rehired within a period of 30 days." Juan Garcia was due for another resignation, and when he came in, we showed him the order and explained that standing in line the next day would do him no good if he resigned today. 30 days is a long time, Juan. It was a grave matter, and he took time to reflect on it. So did Gonzales, Mendoza, Ayala, and Ortiz. Ultimately, however, they were all back, and they all resigned. We did our best to dissuade them, and we were sad about the parting. This time it was for keeps, and they shook hands with us solemnly. It was very nice knowing them. Larry and I looked at each other when they were gone, and we both knew that neither of us had been pulling for downtown to win this duel. It was a blue day. In the morning, however, they were all back in line. With the utmost gravity, Juan Garcia informed me that he was a stoker looking for a job. "No dice, Juan," I said. "Come back in 30 days. I warned you." His eyes looked straight into mine without a flicker. "There is some mistake, senor," he said. "I am Manuel Hernandez. I work as the stoker in Pueblo, in Santa Fe, in many places." I stared back at him, remembering the sick wife and the babies without medicine and the mother-in-law in the hospital, the many resignations and the rehirings. I knew that there was a gas plant in Pueblo, and that there wasn't any in Santa Fe. But who was I to argue with a man about his own name? A stoker is a stoker. So I hired him. I hired Gonzales, too, who swore that his name was Carrera, and Ayala, who had shamelessly become Smith. 3 days later, the resigning started. Within a week, our payroll read like a history of Latin America. Everyone was on it. Lopez and Obregon, Villa, Diaz, Batista, Gomez, even San Martin and Bolivar. Finally, Larry and I, growing weary of staring at familiar faces and writing unfamiliar names, went to the superintendent and told him the whole story. He tried not to grin and said, "Damned nonsense." The next day, the orders were taken down. We called our most prominent stokers into the office and pointed to the board. No rules any more. "The next time we hire you, hombres," Larry said grimly, "come in under the names you like best, because that's the way you are going to stay on the books." They looked at us, and they looked at the board. Then, for the first time in the long duel, their teeth flashed white. "Sí, señores," they said. And so it was.